यम वदनो वदतां वरा माताजी श्री उद्धव उवाच श्री उद्धव सेड यथा हाउ एवं दस अनुबुद्धेयम् आई मे प्रॉपरली अंडरस्टैंड वदा प्लीज स्पीक नह टू अस वदताम ऑफ ऑल स्पीकर्स वरा ओ यू हु आर द बेस्ट ट्रांसलेशन by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shri Uddhava said, O best of all speakers, please explain to me how I may properly understand this. So this text has no purpose, so we'll read the next verse. Sudhusaham imam manya atmani asad atikramam विदुषामपि विश्वात्मन प्रकृतिर् हि बलियसी ऋते त्वद्धर्म निरतान शांतांस्ते चरणालयान. ट्रांसलेशन. ओ सोल ऑफ द यूनिवर्स, द कंडीशनिंग ऑफ वन्स पर्सनैलिटी इन मटीरियल लाइफ इज वेरी स्ट्रांग एंड देयरफॉर इट इज वेरी डिफिकल्ट इवन फॉर लर्नेड मेन टू टॉलरेट द ऑफेंसेस committed against them by ignorant people. Only your devotees who are fixed in your loving service and who have achieved peace by residing at your lotus feet are able to tolerate such offenses. Unless one becomes advanced in the process of hearing and chanting the glories of the Supreme Lord, theoretical learning cannot make one actually saintly. One's conditioned personality, the result of long material association, is very difficult to overcome. Therefore, we should humbly take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who has so wonderfully explained to Sri Uddhava the real meaning of knowledge. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada to the 11th canto, 22nd chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Enumeration of the Elements of Material Creation. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam rupah kada mahiyam dadati swapadantikam vandeham shri guruho shri yutapada kamalam shri gurun vaishnavamscha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana raghunathanvitam tam sajivam साद्वैतम् सावधूतम् परिजनसहितम् कृष्णचैतन्यदेवम् श्रीराधा कृष्णपादान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीन बंधो जगतपते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्णा। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम 11th कैंटो। द टॉक्स आर गोइंग ऑन बिटवीन कृष्णा एंड हिज डियर डिवोटी उद्धव एंड दिस सेक्शन ऑफ द श्रीमद् भागवतम इज नोन एज द उद्धव गीता। वट एवर टॉपिक्स वी फाइंड डिस्कस्ड इन दिस कॉन्वर्सेशन यू विल फाइंड ऑल दीज टॉपिक्स discussed briefly in the Bhagavad Gita which Krishna spoke to Arjuna. But there Krishna did not have much time, it was a battlefield. And here they are sitting casually like friends and therefore they are discussing in great detail, there is no hurry. So Uddhavji is such a confidential servant of Krishna that even when the whole Yadu dynasty was destroyed, he did not get affected by the curse, by Krishna's grace. He was sent by Krishna to Badrikashram. After this conversation is over, Krishna tells Uddhavji that on the 7th day from now, this ocean will rise and cover the entire city of Dwarka. And of course, the entire Yadu dynasty is destroyed. But before that, Krishna sends Uddhavji to Badrikashram. He did not want Uddhavji to go through this. Even though he also belonged to Yadu dynasty and the curse was on the entire Yadu dynasty, to the extent that Krishna took that curse upon himself also. But Uddhavji is so dear to Krishna that he did not want him to go through the curse. And he sends him to Badrikashram. But how is it that the curse did not affect Uddhavji at Badrikashram? Because that is the glory of Badrinath, this Badrikashram, that there no curses can affect a person. That is the influence of that place. That is explained in the various scriptures, that no curses actually affect a person when he is in Badrikashram. So this place is known as Badrinath because once Lord Narayan, Nar Narayan, when he appeared as, before he appeared, he was performing tapasya. He was deeply contemplating about killing one demon called Sahasrakavach, and he was at the same time also thinking about the people of Kaliyug, about Jan Kalyan. So he was meditating. And he was sitting in that particular part of the Kedarkhand, which is now Badrinath. And he was totally exposed to the weather. Cold, summer, winter, rainfall, snow. So Mother Lakshmi came and she wanted to render some service to Lord Vishnu in this condition. So she became a tree of Beri. And Beri in Sanskrit is called Badri. So she provided that shade to Lord Narayan at that spot. So that's how that place now is known as Badrika Ashram or Badri Narayan. Pleased by her service, Lord Narayan gave her the benediction that from this point onwards, because of this service to me, your name will come first before my name. So that's how the tradition started. Badri Narayan, Badrika Ashram, Lakshmi Narayan, Radha Krishna. And this is also known as Badri Vishal because there was a king of the name Vishal. So after him, he was a great devotee. So the Lord blessed him also because he performed the tapasya. So Badri Vishal. So this is the place which is called Bhu Vaikuntha, the Vaikuntha on this planet Earth. And it is so powerful that no curses, because it is the Lord's own home, no curses can take place in the Lord's abode, because it is beyond the jurisdiction of this material world. We have a similar example when Narad Muni, he participates in the Rasa Leela at Kusum Sarovar, near Kusum Sarovar, Govardhan. So he's instructed by Srimati Radharani to write what he has seen. And that's how he written Narad Bhakti Sutra. But before that, he told Srimati Radharani that, how can I write? I am cursed that I cannot stay in one place for a long time. I am cursed by Daksh Prajapati. In order to write, I have to stay in one place. So then he was told that this is Vrindavan. This is beyond the jurisdiction of the material world. No curses can take place there. No curses affect anybody. It is not a part of the material world. So that's how this whole place, Badrika Ashram, is so famous. Any abode of the Lord, in Jagannath Puri temple also you go, they say if somebody is doing some tantra mantra, as soon as he enters, so these people do not enter the temple of Lord Jagannath. As soon as they enter, all their powers are gone. So they are scared, especially those who use these perfections to harm others. So when we are in that realm, in that space of Krishna, nothing can affect us. And if somebody is affecting us, we must understand it is only happening by the will of the Lord. Parikshit Maharaj, the main listener of Srimad Bhagavatam, because of which Srimad Bhagavatam manifested, he had the power to counteract the curse. Garudji, when he was cursed by Saubari Muni, he could not be affected by the curse. But they accepted it as the will of the Lord. Chitraketu Maharaj had the power to counteract the curse of Mother Parvati. He was so powerful, a devotee. Still he accepted it. And all these are different manifestations of the Lord's mercy in a devotee's life. But ordinarily a devotee is not affected by any curse of a materialist. He is totally immune. So in this section, Uddhav is asking a very important question. He addresses Krishna as the soul of the universe. Because without his presence, this universe cannot remain active. It is explained in the second canto, third canto, how the material ingredients are created by the Lord. But they are just lying like that. All the 24 elements of the creation. And they do not spring into action. Only when the Lord glances upon the material nature, things start happening. So only when He enters each of the atoms, andantarastha paramanu chayat chayantarastham. So He has entered into each and every atom, Lord Brahma says, that is how things are moving. So He is the soul of the universe. He is present in every body. Just we are only present in our body, but the Lord is present in every body. And in fact, earth, water, fire, air, ether, that is what mind, intelligence and ego, that is what this whole material world is made up of. And Krishna says in the Gita, these are my energies. Then he also explains all the souls are also my parts and parcels. So even if these bodies are moving around and everything that is moving around, it is because Krishna has entered into each and everything. And that is why he has been addressed as the soul of the universe. Without him, the universes cannot exist. They cannot act. So Uddhavji is talking about the conditioning of one's personality in material life is very strong, and therefore it is very difficult even for learned men to tolerate the offenses committed against them by ignorant people. Only your devotees who are fixed in your loving service and who have achieved peace by residing at your lotus feet are able to tolerate such offenses. Yes, so the conditionings you must have experienced, we can call it habits, different kinds of conditionings a person is born with, and these conditionings are built up over many lifetimes. And nowadays you have, because one's personality in material life is very strong conditioning, you have many people doing courses on personality, and they try to give you some techniques to change your personality. But all that these courses can do is just tell you what is your personality maximum. But they cannot tell you, they cannot tell us why we have a particular type of personality and how to change it. They may give some techniques by which we can reform ourselves, or like this age of Kali Yuga has become an age of externals. And this is the major emphasis nowadays. A particular nature of a person he's born with, and they can teach some techniques by which we can learn how to smile, how to speak well, how to dress up, how to behave in social interactions, and how to climb the ladder of success. But internally the person is the same, that he has not changed. Even if person has got some bad habits, there are institutions to reform those bad habits. But by employing those techniques, a person may get reformed, but for some time. But what we are looking for is not reformation, we are looking for transformation of the heart. Unless a person's heart is transformed, those habits will come back as soon as they find, those conditionings will come back as soon as they find some conducive environment. So externally we may put up a show, oh, I have become a better person, I don't get angry, I have learned to count till 10 when I get anger. But that anger is a disease of the heart. It has not gone away, we have just covered it up. So Parikshit Maharaj compares these kind of techniques or this kind of process to the bathing of an elephant. A person goes, an elephant goes into the lake, takes a nice bath, then comes out, then throws dirt all over the body again. So what is the use of such bathing? Similarly, there is no point in just focusing on the externals, trying to change the personality by some material methods, some material techniques. We need to change the heart. When the heart becomes pure, then everything is taken care of. And that, so these conditionings, the Bhagavad Gita answers why a particular person has a particular type of personality. This is the effect of the three modes. When a person falls into this material world, depending on the choices that the soul makes, a particular mode catches the soul. And then as we go on making the choices, a particular mode becomes more prominent in the person's life. And therefore now we are born with certain type of inclinations, a mindset, a particular type of body, intelligence, faith, everything. This topic of the three modes of material nature is so important to understand that throughout the Gita we find this topic. In the third chapter Krishna discusses, then there is one particular chapter known as three modes of material nature, and practically after chapter number 12, the rest of the six chapters are only dedicated to describing the influence of the three modes of nature in our lives. And 17th, 18th chapters specifically explaining how each and every aspect of our life, the kind of faith we have, the kind of food we eat or like, the kind of music we like, the kind of determination we have, the kind of charity we give, all these things, everything, our work, our thoughts, our actions, everything is under the influence of the three gunas. And Krishna says, we are just moved around like puppets by these three gunas. We think we are making the choices, but we are not making the choices. The modes are driving us around. Depending on whatever modes we have acquired, we run in a particular direction. The kind of association we are attracted to, the kind of people we are attracted to, the kind of habits we have. These conditionings are nothing but the influence of the three modes. And how to get rid of these conditionings? As Uddhavji is also explaining here, Krishna himself explains in the Bhagavad Gita, towards the end of that chapter, the three modes of material nature, after explaining in detail the influence of these three modes, he says, Mam cha abhyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati taitan brahma bhoyaya kalpate. That if one wants to get rid of these conditionings, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Authority is giving the process. He's not teaching us some technique to cover it up. Because the change has to come from within. So he gives the process. Anybody who engages in bhakti yoga, bhakti yogena sevate sagunan samati taitan, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Only a person who engages in his devotional service can completely get rid of all the previous conditionings. Whoever that person may be, however strong the conditionings may be, however impure the heart may be, but when starts to engage in the devotional service of Krishna, gradually a person becomes free from those conditionings. That means he becomes free from the influence of the three modes. So when a person becomes free from the influence of the three modes, naturally he'll be a different person. Naturally his personality will change. By external techniques it doesn't change. It changes only when one engages in the bhakti process. And there are so many examples in these scriptures. And in our movement also we see so many examples. Like Srila Prabhupada, when he went to the West in 1965, it was the hippie revolution. And they had all kinds of conditionings, engaging in all kinds of bad habits. It's very difficult to overcome. And what did Srila Prabhupada do? Even when they would be sitting in front of Prabhupada, Prabhupada would speak the Hari Katha, and he would do Hari Kirtan, and he would give them Hari Prasad. He would sit in front of them, and as they are sitting in front, Prabhupada is speaking to them about Krishna. They have never heard this word Krishna. Forget about hearing about Krishna, they could not hear themselves talking because they were so high on drugs. They would sit dirty clothes, sometimes they would not take bath for months. It was like the movement, just do it, just do what you like. And do not trust anybody who is above 30. And to such people, Prabhupada is speaking about Krishna from Srimad Bhagavatam. He is telling them about Lord Chaitanya, telling them about Sanatana Goswami. And they did not know any of these things. So because Prabhupada had that complete faith in Hari Katha and Hari Kirtan and the Prasad, therefore he was able to accomplish what he did in a very short time. Sometimes it is very easy to get enamored by the world is teaching. Because these techniques, these things, they give immediate result. And people want that. Fast cars, fast results, fast communication. But the bhakti yoga process, it works from within, from inside. Inside out. And therefore, it destroys the disease from the root. And Srila Prabhupada was speaking Hari Katha, doing Harinam and feeding them prasad. And gradually, those people got reformed, they gave up all their bad habits. And now we see the rest is history. So all these conditionings, this is a contemporary example, but you see in the scriptures, the examples of a person called Ratnakar. He was born in a Brahmana family. But because of his bad association with low-class people, especially the people who used to kill, steal, violent, he also became a violent person. And he would kill so many people almost every day. And Narad Muni, he decided to do something about it, because he knew if he's not stopped, he would go to hell for all his sinful activities. And Narad Muni comes, and what does he tell him? First he sends him to his house. He tries to convince him not to commit sinful activities, and he says, how would I maintain myself? He says, you are trying to maintain your family members by committing sinful activities. Go and ask your family whether they would also take part in suffering for the sinful activities that you are doing. They would also share the reaction with you. When he goes back, the family members frankly told him, no, we have nothing to do with the sinful reaction. We don't want to be punished. That's for you to handle. It's your duty to feed us, to maintain us. And then he came back, and Narad Muni gave him the ultimate spiritual practice. When all other spiritual practices fail, there is one thing that never fails, and that is the holy name of Krishna, holy name of the Lord. And he knew that this person would not be able to chant because he was so sinful. In order to be able to chant the Lord's holy name, one needs a lot of devotional credits, some kind of sukriti, otherwise the name would not even appear on the tongue of a person. So the only thing he could relate to was Mara, Mara. He was given that name, and that same person, just by chanting the Lord's name Ulta, he became the most famous Valmiki Rishi. All his conditioning simply disappeared in a very short time. Same example we see in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Narad Muni, he comes across a hunter called Mrigari. He was so sinful that he would kill the innocent animals half, not fully. He would kill them half, and then he would take great pleasure in seeing them dying, moaning in pain. That was his pleasure. So you can imagine the kind of cruel heart he had. And Narad Muni again gives him that holy name. And this Mrigari, the hunter, gets reformed to such an extent that when Narad Muni comes with his friend Parvat Muni to meet him sometime later, Mrigari runs towards Narad Muni because the spiritual master Guru has come. But he's stopping on the way, being very careful. And Narad Muni asked him, why were you stopping? What is this? He was hesitant to even bow down, offer his pranams to Narad Muni. And he said, how come? Why are you so careful? What is happening? He said, because there are so many ants on the way. So the same person who would take pleasure in killing animals half and seeing them dying in pain and take pleasure in such activities, now he could not step even on an ant. This is the power of bhakti yoga. All other processes, jnana yoga, karma yoga, karma kanda, they cannot purify the heart. They can maybe help us repent or for the sins that we have committed or our sinful reactions, but they cannot destroy the propensity to commit sin. There are so many processes of atonement. Okay, they may just destroy the reaction for the sinful activity that we might perform or the offenses, but they do not take away the propensity to engage in those sinful habits. So the propensity can only be destroyed by the power of bhakti. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, after hearing the description of the hellish planets, Parikshit Maharaj, he raised a question, being a compassionate Vaishnava. He was very terrified that the people are suffering so much. How would they be saved from the eternal suffering that they have to go through, both in this material world and especially in the hellish planets? So he asked this question from Shukadev Goswami. Now Shukadev Goswami, in order to test the caliber of his student, because an expert teacher teaches according to how much the student can handle, takes into consideration his capacity. So he tells him, okay, so if a person is very sinful, he will definitely go to hellish planets and be punished in proportion to the amount of sins that he has committed. But somehow or the other, if he performs the process of atonement, he accepts the process of atonement prescribed by the scriptures, then he may be saved from the sinful reactions. He may not go to the hellish planets for punishment. But Parikshit Maharaj is very attentive and very well versed with the intricacies of this karma. He says, "My dear spiritual master, this process is fine, process of atonement. But the problem is, this is like the bathing of an elephant. A person commits sinful activities and he goes and he atones and he gets free from the sinful reaction, but that propensity still remains. So he comes back, commits the same sinful activities again as soon as he finds some conducive environment. So the propensity, as long as the propensity is there, he will do it again and again. What is the use of such atonement? It's like an elephant entering the lake, taking a nice bath, coming out, again throwing dirt all over his body. So what is the use of such bathing?" So then Shukdev Goswami is very pleased. Then he wants to test him further. He says, "Okay, then one has to cultivate knowledge, jnana. Because the fire of knowledge can completely burn to ashes this tree, this sinful tree, tree of sinful reactions. It can completely burn this tree to ashes. Because the fire of knowledge, one learns to discriminate what is right, what is wrong, and there are some austerities involved. So that will burn away the tree of sin. Again, Parikshit Maharaj said that this may just destroy the tree. It may burn it to ashes. Just like when there is forest fire, many trees are burnt to ashes. But after some time, when the environment is proper, favorable, there are rains, the trees again grow because the roots are still there in the soil. So Parikshit Maharaj is asking, you're saying that the knowledge of fire, the fire of knowledge destroys the tree of sinful reactions to ashes. What about the roots? The roots are still there, and as immediately when the person, the roots, that means the seeds of sinful desires are still lying in the heart, as soon as there is some favorable environment, the seeds will again fructify and the person will engage in the sinful activity all the more, again and again. So what is the use of even jnana, cultivating knowledge? By knowledge you may just learn to control your senses, and because of some austerity, because refraining from forbidden activities, it may just burn the reactions. But what about the conditioning, the habit, the propensity which is lying within the heart? Again, it will come up, just like the trees will again grow because the roots are still present in the soil. So then Parikshit Maharaj is extremely happy. Shukadev Goswami is extremely happy. Then he gives him the ultimate solution. So just like in the Bhagavad Gita, there are three sections, the first six chapters, the middle six, the last six chapters. And the middle six chapters are like the most valuable chapters. They are called Bhakti Yoga. This is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. And every chapter also ends with emphasis on Bhakti Yoga, even other chapters describing Dhyana Yoga, Karma Yoga. So Bhakti Yoga is the essence. And especially chapter numbers 7 to 12, they exclusively deal with Bhakti Yoga. So this goes to show how this is the main part of the Bhagavad Gita. Just like a very valuable jewel is completely kept hidden between two layers, the bottom and the layer which is above. So similarly, these middle six chapters are totally covered or protected by the first six chapters and the last six chapters. The essence is kept in the middle. So Bhakti Yoga. So similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam is the highest scripture, which was written by Srila Vyasadeva in the maturity of his spiritual realization, after which he was completely satisfied. After writing Srimad Bhagavatam, there are 12 cantos, and this particular conversation and what that follows takes place in the sixth canto. So this is one of the most important part of Srimad Bhagavatam, this story. This Shukadeva Goswami tells to answer Parikshit Maharaj's question, the story of Ajamil. And this is like telling the essence of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Jiva Goswami writes in one place, then one can understand the essential message of the book by understanding the conclusion, the last part. So if you see the last shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, how does Srimad Bhagavatam end? It is glorifying the holy name of Krishna. Nama Sankirtanam Yasya. It goes like that. That glory to the holy name of Krishna. Glory to that Lord whose Sankirtana, of whose holy name and offering obeisances unto whom can destroy all kind of klesha or dukkha or distress that a person is going through. Simply by chanting the Lord's holy name or bowing down in front of Krishna, one can get rid of all kinds of distress. This is such a simple process. Jnana kand, upasana kand, karma kand, they are very difficult. And even if you perform them perfectly, the conditionings do not go away. But then Shukadeva Goswami answers, being very happy with Parikshit Maharaj. He says, yes. So then he talks about the process of devotional service to Krishna. And this is the only way to get rid. So this bhakti yoga, when one engages in the bhakti of Lord Krishna, then it not only destroys, this bhakti process begins with hearing and chanting. So when one engages in this simplest of processes, then one not only destroys the sinful reactions of his sinful activities, but he also destroys the propensity to commit sin. That means the heart becomes fully purified of all the sinful proclivities. So this is the only way Shukadeva Goswami glorifies bhakti path. And he says, and this is a path on which one can run blindly. One can run blindly. Even if you fall down, what is the loss? Because whatever progress, first of all, you have made, it becomes your permanent asset. In karma yoga, dhyana yoga, jnana or other rituals mentioned in the scriptures related to karma kand, unless we attain 100% success, it is considered a failure and we have to start from zero all over again. But in the bhakti yoga process, suppose we have completed 10% and if we fall down also, then we begin and we begin from 11%. And it is carried forward to the next lifetime as well, as Krishna speaks in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So Shukadeva Goswami says, this is a path on which you can run blindly. Even if you fall down, there is no problem. First of all, the reason, whatever advancement that you have made, it stays with you. It is not considered a fall down. It is just a stop. It's a halt that we take. Second benefit, that suppose we fall down, there is no atonement required. Srila Rupa Goswami mentions in the Nectar of Devotion that in bhakti path, even if you fall down, there is no atonement required. What do you need to do? Simply get up from where you have fallen and start walking again. On the other paths, we need atonement. Because bhakti yoga itself is the biggest atonement. Why people engage in sinful activities, what is considered a sin? That is, anything which is separate from Krishna is a sin. But when one is engaging in the bhakti yoga process, that itself is the result of all atonement. Or that itself is considered the best atonement. Because why do we need to perform atonement? Because we have committed some sinful activity. So atonement is required to purify the existence, consciousness, so that we understand we have to engage in Krishna service. But if somebody is engaging in Krishna service directly, why does he need atonement? Atonement is only required to understand that we have to engage in Krishna service. So bhakti yoga is the easiest path. And here Uddhavji is specially mentioning how only a person who has achieved peace by residing at your lotus feet, my dear Lord, can tolerate all offenses. And we find so many examples. people like Vishwamitra Muni, he could not tolerate the offenses. He gave in to anger. But we find the example of Durvasa Rishi. He's such a great sage, can curse anybody, can destroy the whole universe. Vishwamitra could create an entire constellation which is still lying in the sky next to the heavenly planets. But they could not give up their conditionings. And they committed offense against the innocent people. Like Durvasa Rishi cursed Ambarish Maharaj. It was unjust. But Ambarish Maharaj, he just folded his hands and he tolerated it. And he went a step ahead. What to speak of tolerating, he also forgave Durvasa Rishi. He did not even take the offense. Parikshit Maharaj cursed. It was not justified by an immature Brahmana boy, but he accepted it. He did not retaliate. He tolerated it. Chitraketu Maharaj was cursed by Mother Parvati. He tolerated it. He did not retaliate. So these qualities can only be found in devotees. As we discussed in the beginning, people are teaching techniques how to control anger, and they say, drop your ego. Is that so simple? Dropping the ego and count till 10, and that's how you can control your anger. These are the diseases of the heart. Unless the heart becomes purified, how will these things go away? They are just trying to cover up. But essentially, only a devotee will be able to develop these qualities by engaging in Krishna service, beginning with hearing and chanting. Because the heart is completely purified. When the heart is completely pure, all it is left with is just divinity. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati akinchana sarvair gunes tatra samasate sura harav bhaktasya kuto mahat guna manorathe nasati dhavato bahihi. Srimad Bhagavatam is very loudly proclaiming, who can have all the divine qualities, tolerance, all these, compassion, selflessness? Only a person who develops a genuine devotion for the Lord, all the godly qualities manifest in his personality. Whereas somebody who is not a devotee, he cannot have any good qualities. And we practically see when we interact with people who are not devotees that even if they seem to possess some good qualities, it is just a show. One provoking situation and everything is finished. In this material world, people are taught how to smile, how to speak, how to eat, how to move around, how to dress up. But the internally, unless that change comes from within, the heart is purified, everything is just a show. But a devotee, the change happens from within. It is personally orchestrated by Krishna. So therefore, a devotee only can develop the qualities to actually tolerate. The tolerance, it's such a great virtue. Tolerance. He can only tolerate the offenses committed against him. What to speak of tolerating? Once His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj mentioned, a devotee does not even take an offense. He doesn't even think that an offense has been committed against him. Like Ambarish Maharaj, when Durvasa Muni came back, being scorched by the heat of the Sudarshan Chakra, he fell down at his feet. And Ambarish was feeling embarrassed. Why is he falling at my feet? What is wrong? Narad Muni is cursed by Daksha Prajapati. Narad Muni could have counter-cursed, but he tolerated. Devotees are not bothered about the dualities of this world or curse. They just accept everything as the mercy of the Lord. And because they are accepting everything, every situation is the mercy of the Lord, they have such faith. So Krishna has to intervene and make every situation merciful for them. Even if it is not. Even if it is happening because of some other reason. But because they have faith that it is happening, it is all Krishna's mercy. So Krishna has to actually intervene and reciprocate with that faith and make that situation also, even the cursing, favorable for them and show to the whole world that it is actually indeed my mercy. So the only path which is the auspicious path for all, for every living entity, as is explained by the speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, Suta Goswami, to the sages of Naimisharana is the bhakti yoga. That is the highest occupation, because that will take care of everything. The root cause of all misery, the root cause of developing all conditionings, all bad habits, is we have turned away from Krishna, and then it has expanded to every aspect of our existence in this material world for many lifetimes. So that is the root cause, turning away from Krishna. So rather than trying to handle each and every aspect of our life separately, if we simply go back to the root and try to engage in devotional service to Krishna, then everything else will also contract, which is expanded. The conditionings will go away, and all will be left with a pure heart. And the actual conditioning, which is engagement in devotional service to Krishna, that is the only conditioning we are aspiring for. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai.